This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. It took more than 30 years, but a Baltimore judge vacated the murder conviction of James Langhorne, the judge citing two recanted identifications of Langhorne and other reasons.
It's the result of years of work by the Mid-Atlantic Innocence Project, Langhorne, grateful to them and his loved ones.
I worked 30 years to get to this point, so I'm going to enjoy every moment and put, you know, the anger behind me. Because if anger owns you, you know, it owns you. So I don't want it to own me.
Langhorne was convicted for a fatal shooting in 1993.
ABC's Michelle Franzen. The Associated Press reports its sources say 86-year-old Andrew Lester will plead guilty in Kansas City, Missouri on Friday for shooting and wounding then 16-year-old Ralph Yarl, who'd mistakenly knocked on Lester's door. Florida gave a lethal injection to James Dennis Ford for a double murder in 1997. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks pull out the win in Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It went down to the wire. The Bucks holding on to win 103-101 over the Timberwolves. Doc Rivers challenged the Bucks defensively before the game to hold Minnesota to 100 points or less.
You know, it's funny. We set a goal and we didn't get it, but our goal was to hold them under 100. And they got 101. That's why the guys were like, no, yo. That was a goal for us going into the game. We knew scoring with the offense that we had out would be rough, but we thought we could really win the game with a defensive effort, and that's what we did.
So Milwaukee heads into the All-Star break in fifth place in the East with a record of 29-24. Baseball. The Brewers signing Tampa Bay Rays lefty Tyler Alexander to a one-year deal worth over $1 million. Meanwhile, Brandon Woodruff says he is on schedule to return from Tommy John surgery.
Listen, I'm healthy. I'm coming into camp healthy. I just have to take different steps than everybody else. And when I'm ready, I'll be ready.
That's Brewers pitcher Brandon Woodruff. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Skilled trade workers are the backbone of every community and also the Army National Guard. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and in every other trade needed to accomplish the mission. These soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Remember during campaign time? Remember how Donald Trump said day one, prices were coming down day one. Day one, our policies. Done. We're going to bring prices down. It's going to be great. In fact, there was talk, concern about deflation. He was going to do such a good job, we were going to have deflation. Now, what you're seeing is you know, everything's going up. You know, inflation's up, and he's trying to blame that on Biden. Gas prices up, beer prices up, eggs have never been more expensive than they are right now. And Trump said, oh, maybe our policies aren't going to do it. Now, here's the thing. I was saying during the campaign that the president doesn't do an awful lot to set the prices. That's corporate America. And now look, the president can do a couple things that, you know, would maybe cause some instability, you know, like maybe saying that we're going to raise, you know, tariffs through the roof on everything, which could cause people to go, hey, in defense of what's going to happen, or could start to go, well, you know, all that investment that was being made that we saw a future in being cut, well, all those workers we were hiring and training, they're going to all go. And that's what we're seeing, right? You know, we're seeing that investments that we were made. Ford, for instance, said, hey, get ready for some layoffs. Because, well, you know why? Because of Trump's policies. You know, Ford has invested an enormous amount of money in factories that would produce batteries for electric vehicles. They've got plants in Ohio and Kentucky and Tennessee. The one in Tennessee is like the gold standard. And in Michigan, there's a bunch of them. A lot of money was put into it. Ford put a lot of money in it. The Biden era legislation put a lot of money into it. Because, hey, we would like to be the leader in technology. We used to think this way. Understand, as a country, we used to think in investing to the edge of technological possibilities and then pushing those boundaries. Now it's all, hey, how much could I stuff in my pocket today? And the heck, tomorrow, not a problem. This is where we are. And we told you, and I hate to be that guy and say, you know, I told you so. But I'm gonna do that. We said during the campaign, the policies that he's let us in on, the Project 2025, it's all chaos, and chaos isn't good for an economy. Chaos doesn't make investors feel all warm and fuzzy. And look, you generally could care less about investors, but when it means they're pulling back and they're defunding things, that means job layoffs, and those are coming. You know, we're seeing them happen as we speak. But also the prices of things that we were told were going to come down haven't come down. And now they're, as I said, they're kind of walking back. They're kind of walking back the whole, you know, we care. And it's not even, the messaging isn't anymore we feel your pain. It's like, what can we do? It's Biden's fault. Now remember, and this is where you got to hold them to their word. They said they had plans. The plans that we have seen thus far, does this make you warm and fuzzy? It looks like surrender on the foreign policy frame. It looks like total chaos on the domestic frame. And it looks like a hijack. When you get into the workings of government, because Doge Boy and his little ferrets, they are, as we speak, tunneling their way into every arm of our federal government and defunding it and then making stuff up along the way. You may remember the condom story. Evidently, we were given Gaza $50 gazillion for condoms. And you're like, why would we be giving condoms to anybody? And you find out, you know, it's a place that, you know, HIV is pretty prevalent. And, you know, for a fraction of what Musk said, you know, we were giving them the much needed protection to not spread HIV and AIDS that maybe might benefit us by having not spread across the globe. Seems like sane, rational thinking. But wow, to hear the Red Hats loser, we shouldn't be giving them a dime. Radical self-interest says we should. Because if we can stop it there, we could calm it there, we could tap it down. Maybe it doesn't run rampant here. And what was interesting is someone called Elon Musk on that and said, hey, you know, what about this? You know, you were wrong. And, you know, this is what it was. His quote was, first of all, some of the things I say will be incorrect. And should be corrected. Now, I stopped right there because everything else after this is just BS. Some of the things I say will be incorrect, and I should be corrected. Now, understand, this is a guy who owns one of the largest social media platforms on the planet, reaches hundreds of millions of people, and even when he says something on his platform, you know, Trump's platform echoes it, and then other people pick it up. So we're talking a lot of people to hear lies. What he's saying is, my lies, that will be seen by hundreds of millions of people, should be corrected by you, who I will throttle back so no one sees it. So basically, I can lie, like Donald Trump, with impunity. Nobody is going to hold me accountable. And what it's going to do is it's going to over-misinform the already over-misinformed. You know, like USAID, you know, catering Chelsea Clinton's wedding. I'm getting all kinds of crazy things because understand, there will be questionable things that we fund. There's a lot of grant money that goes out for, hey, you know, the one that keeps thrown at me is the cats walking on treadmills. Has something to do with hip dysplasia. There are scientists who go, maybe we should find out about that. It might help us in another area. This is why I lose my mind over the dumbest kid in the class voting for a con man. Now, I'm smart enough to understand that I don't know everything. And that maybe by asking scientific questions and doing actual research, not just sitting on the can with our mouth open watching YouTube, but actual peer-reviewed, tested research, that it could help me down the road. It could make our lives a little bit better. We used to be that country. We used to be the country that didn't ridicule intelligence. We didn't fear intelligence. But to look to someone like Elon Musk, who's been the largest welfare queen in the history of this country, and then say, yeah, you've got the keys to defund all of the organizations that make our lives better. I got to wonder. Now, what's surprising to me, and I gotta be quite honest, what is surprising to me is prices have not come down. I really thought that prices would come down. I really thought that, not because Trump has policies, not because he would do anything, but because the CEO class now realizes they've got real power. They've got the levers of power. They've got the control of government. So if they just, you know, little bread for the circus, you know, they could get everything. But they haven't. And they won't. And this is where I'm hoping that the realization is beginning to happen. Every day I'm getting responses from people who have been my red hat barometer for my red hat barometers for a long time, who are now going, well, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with this. Some of them even going out and saying, I regret voting for him. You were right. He did everything you said they were going to do. They're doing it. So for me, this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for Democrats to, I don't know, take it. When they go low, smash their heads into the dirt and start going after them. Hold town halls, hold rallies, get out and fight a little bit. Get out and have a message, maybe a vision. That would be helpful, don't you think? Some policies like Bernie Sanders capping interest rates at 10%. About damn time. Start coming out with some actual policies that are going to make working people's lives better, and they'll come back. I guarantee it. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, California Congressman Ro Khanna is going to be here to share some thoughts on just that. You know, where we are with all of this insanity and what Democrats are going to do, and if they're up to the test, if they're up to the challenge of the moment of taking on, well, the fascists. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, since Trump came into office, we've seen mass layoffs. More are coming. We're not evidently not paying farmers. Inflation's up. Gas prices are up. Beer prices are up. And eggs, the coveted eggs, the reason everyone claimed Biden had to go up. So much for prices are going to go down on day one. And look, eggs never higher, never higher. And as I've been saying, you know, as they're screwing things up, there's going to be an opportunity for Democrats once Trump causes the next economic calamity. They're going to need a message that hits home with working people. And one of the people I think has that message is my next guest. Rick Hanna is a congressman from California, one of the great messengers out there. Ro, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Well, you summarized everything absolutely correctly. I mean, look, the president ran on lowering prices day one. He's proposed on his inaugural address a universal tax on anything coming into the United States. He even wanted to create a new agency called the External Revenue Service. And he's had totally a shaky policy in what he wants to do. So it's created uncertainty. Consumer sentiment, according to the University of Michigan, which measures it, down. Expectations of inflation over the next year, up. We're off to a terrible start.
Yeah, but again, we were sold on this idea, Ro. We were going to get cheap eggs, 99 cents, gas, buck a gallon. It was going to be this economic utopia. And yet everything that he's come out with has been about instability. We're going to slap tariffs on Canada and Mexico and more on China. And look, I'm not an anti-tariff guy.
No, but I'm for strategic tariffs too, but you don't have universal tax on everyone. And you don't announce them one day, repeal them the next day. People don't know. I mean, it'd almost be better if you just had them there. But this back and forth, the instability is what's caused all the uncertainty. And it's not me saying it. It's the inflation is going up. The expectations of inflation are going up. Expectation with consumer sentiment of consumer sentiment is down. And, you know, they had a word for that in the 1970s. It was called stagflation. I hope we don't get there, but that's been the start.
And no, what I've been saying here on the program is the solutions that we need for a better future, a more prosperous future for working people, is going to come out of the savagery of their policies. The suffering that they're going to cause is going to bring us back together. The old labor frame of, you know, when your stomach gets empty, your head gets right. I think there's an opportunity here for Democrats.
Absolutely, because we have an opportunity to say what we really need to do, which is rebuild our industrial base. You can't just do that with tariffs. You need to have investment in building new steel plants with direct reduction iron and the new technology, build the new aluminum plants here, build new shipbuilding here. You know, China built 1,700 ships in 2022, and we built 5 ships. What's Trump doing about that? Actually creating high-paying jobs in places like Johnstown, in places like Farrell, in places like Warren. That's something we could do. And then we can say, we're going to be the party that gets health care for everyone with Medicare for All. We're going to be the party that actually gets a wage increase. We should have fired the parliamentarian to get the minimum wage increase when we had the chance. We didn't. But now we're going to actually deliver a wage increase. And I think people will see through Trump's braggart personality when their lives don't improve.
But Ro, we've got plastic straws now. Plastic straws are going to be, you know, has a future.
Well, you know, the whole thing with Trump has been a cultural war, even on his savings, right? Does he go after the sacred cows? Does he go after the 5 primes at the Pentagon, where it has 56% of federal spending? No. Does he go after Medicare Advantage that's ripping off the American taxpayers? No. Does he go after the pharma companies that are charging, gouging the Medicare with their high prices? No. What does he go after? He goes after a few million dollars of these programs that are to fight a cultural war. He is not engaged in a war to lower prices. He's engaged in a cultural war in this country, and people are going to see through that.
Now, I saw a story just the other day. It said they want to cut something like $800 billion from Medicaid, 20% of SNAP benefits. I don't think this is what my red hat friends voted for.
No, I mean, I've talked to Trump voters. They said, where was our no tax on overtime? Where is no tax on tips? And that's the stuff that got them to vote for Trump. And he's done none of that his first month. He has focused instead on total issues about cutting spending that people need. Medicaid spending paused. Cuts in funding for cancer research. Cuts in funding for schools and working class neighborhoods. I mean, you know what? The policies, unfortunately, they're hurting the red counties and red states the most, just disproportionately.
But you know, what do you say to someone? And look, I've taken the position where, you know what? You voted for this and this happens to you. There's a level of, this is what you wanted. You got what you wanted. take your medicine kind of thinking. And I know that's wrong. And there's a part of my brain that goes, no, that's not how we should be. But there's part of me that goes, I don't know. You get what you wanted.
Well, look, I think we have to respect, obviously, anyone who voted for Trump, try to persuade him, win them back. But the reality is that they voted for someone who is going to try a economic theory that has failed for the last 30 years. It trickled down economics, tax breaks to the very, very wealthy, cuts in benefits that ordinary Americans rely on, and he's adding to that blanket tariffs. I'm for strategic tariffs, but he's adding to that just an incoherent tariff policy. And that's a recipe for failure. And so do I hope he changes course? Absolutely. Would I rather he change course and get a political win? Yes, but he's not. And my sense is that more and more people are waking up to say, you know what? That's just not working. Yeah, we wanted a manufacturing nation. We wanted America to come out of its stagnancy, but he's not doing it.
No, and look, and I said during the campaign, that was never going to happen. We read Project 2025. It is what they are moving on, regardless of what Trump said during the campaign, that he had nothing to do with it. It seems like, and you're there, it seems like that's the playbook.
Well, it is, and maybe he had nothing to do with it. Who knows whether he had something to do with it. The point is that that's kind of irrelevant. He's appointed all the people like Russ Bott and Stephen Miller in senior positions who wrote it. And so he, I think, may not care enough, but he's basically given all his power to people who want to dismantle basic government services. And we're not talking about abstract agencies. We're talking about money in people's schools in working class neighborhoods. We're talking about kids who may have special needs. Everyone knows someone, a family who has a kid who has special needs, who has an IEP program. Funding for that going away. We're talking about funding for Alzheimer's research, cancer research, diabetes research, Parkinson's research going away. That's the type of callousness that these folks have.
Well, as I said, look, the suffering that's going to occur, that's when the solutions are going to come because of their savagery. And you just laid it out. But you brought up Russ Vaught, who now, I guess, is the acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which I guess he doesn't want money for and is not going to do anything with it. Is this just another example of this attack on government at every level, not just that level, but every level of our government?
Well, look, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it's important people know what it does. It, first of all, it costs $700 million a year. That's about $4.80 for each of us. And what it does is it protects any American from overdraft fees. It protects people from fraud, so scammers who want to get you to drain out your bank account or get you to use your credit card in identity theft. It protects against junk fees on our credit card bills when we have a credit card balance remaining. And it saved the American taxpayer $20 billion. So this is what you go after, the one thing that's helping ordinary Americans, as opposed to going after the big five prime contractors that take up 56% of the federal budget. It makes no sense because they're not trying to cut the deficit. They're either trying to deregulate to give economic power back to the big corporations, or they're trying to incite people with cultural outrage. That's their real goal.
But, you know, I get this a lot. Well, all Elon Musk and his little Doge ferrets are doing is, you know, they're just auditing our government. It's just a straight audit. There's nothing nefarious going on. Even though Elon from the Oval Office said, when asked about the condom mistake, or, you know, sometimes I'm going to say things that are wrong, which is admitting you're going to lie to me. But, you know, when I look at this, Ro, and what the frustrating part of it is I don't think the majority of people wanted to dismantle the entire government and then hand it over to someone unelected, unaccountable, and, well, with a lot of conflict of interest.
No, they did not. And the fact that Elon said that is why we have a democracy, right? Because if Elon had come to Congress and said, we're giving $50 million of Gaza to condoms, he would have had 10 members of Congress saying, no, that's not true. And the media would have covered it. And he would have had to correct himself. But when you have one person, I don't care who that person is, how smart that person may be, how economically successful that person may be, they're not going to be better than democracy. And what you have now is Musk unconstitutionally stopping payments to things like cancer research and Alzheimer's research without any consultation with Congress. And I think people are going to wake up because they're going to realize that, you know, the funding he's stopping is not just some crazy programs that he's found in the federal government, which exists, but he's stopping funding to fundamental things like helping find cures to diseases of people in their family.
But, you know, as a member of Congress, and maybe you've got a thought on this, why have the Republicans abdicated their responsibility of oversight? Most of these programs, I think all of the spending that's done is okayed by you guys. Why are they allowing this guy to ferret through and do what he's doing without any type of questioning, any type of oversight? Why aren't we having a committee that investigates this stuff?
Well, we should. We Democrats are trying to call Musk to testify. The Republicans don't want to do it because they're afraid. They're afraid of being primaried with super PAC money. They're afraid of Donald Trump tweeting out against them. I mean, we all know, why did Joni Ernst switch her vote on Pete Hegseth? Because she was threatened with a primary. And right now, if you're a Republican, you're living in fear of the primary, and you're more afraid of a primary than you are committed to standing up for Federalist 51, which said that Congress would never give up its power to the executive branch, because why would members of Congress give up their power to the president? And yet that's exactly what Mike Johnson has done. He said, I'm going to be a junior partner to Donald Trump.
Just hearing those words come out of your mouth, just I know my high school government teacher has passed, but I can only imagine he's rolling in his grave, because I still, to it's been 40 some years since I had him discuss the co-equal branches of government and the balance of power and the checks and balances and all of that with such passion that I can't imagine that, how many civics educators across this country aren't losing their mind at what we're actually doing in this moment?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Look, I think our arguments about standing up for democracy and standing up against Trump's authoritarian instincts fell flat in 2024 because it was all is a hypothetical.
Right.
But now that people are actually seeing it in practice, that a few unelected people who are very, very wealthy, billionaires, are stopping payments on things like Medicaid, cancer research, are stopping payments for funding for schools, now they understand that this is an outrage. And democracy, the democratic spirit, is deep in our hearts. I just think people didn't believe it in 2024. They thought we were exaggerating. They thought we were painting it a picture that wasn't true. Now that they're actually seeing efforts by people to undermine what we all learned in elementary school and junior high, I think you're going to see a huge reaction of Americans. And they're not going to be able to erase the democratic spirit from this country. And what you're going to see is what you already see with Musk, is the declining poll numbers.
So last question I've got for you. You know, as this goes forward, Democrats have got to get out and do more than just file lawsuits and make speeches from the floor. They've got to do more of what you've been doing, coming on programs like this, getting out there, holding town halls, rallies, more mobilization and organizing. Is the party up to it?
We're getting there. We had our tail between our legs for the first 2 months after we lost. It was directionless. It was spineless. We were members going and saying, let me figure out how we work with Donald Trump. All of that has gone out the window. And now people are saying, okay, this president's using unconstitutional means. We've got to not give him any votes on the debt ceiling, any votes on the budget. We've got to get out with people like you, Rick, who are incredible. Progressive activists, voters, ordinary voters in Pennsylvania, around the country. And we've got to make the case, because who's going to save democracy is less about the members of Congress, though we are on the front tip of the spear. It's your listeners. It's people like you who are going to talk to their neighbors, talk to their friends, talk to their families, and say, is this really what you voted for? You know, I get you voted against offshoring. I get you voted against a decrepit, sclerotic Democratic Party, which is filled with career politicians, and you want to change. I get that you voted for someone who's going to shake things up, but did you really vote for cuts in basic funding and programs? You know, the best part about it, Rick, is maybe we're finally going to get to make the argument that government is good, that government does a lot of good things, And this is our opportunity to do it.
No, because all we're going to hear out of Elon Musk, and the reason I brought up his comment of, you know, sometimes I'm going to be wrong, is that they're going to make up a lot of stuff. And a lot of it is going to be accurate. There's a lot of wasteful spending in certain parts. I'm sure you can find a nickel or a dime here or there. But when you're talking about the big things, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the things that people rely on, I fear that goes along with the cat walking on the treadmill.
You're absolutely right. And by the way, are we going to start to do it with Silicon Valley companies to look at all their waste? I guarantee you there's a lot of waste in those companies of people in fancy restaurants and getting masseuses and all of the waste that goes on in yeah. corporate America. So this singling out of federal workers, many of whom would do it for public service, could make a lot more money doing other things, has really been terrible to see. And the country is going to react against it.
Oh, we'll see. Ro, I'd love to have you come back again as often as you want. Always
Thank
great
you,
seeing Rich. You, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for being out there.
Ro Khanna, Congressman from California. I want to hear your thoughts. What did you vote for? Did you vote for the chaos that's coming? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, cold, a low of 0 to 5 below. For tomorrow, a cloudy sky with snow showers developing in the afternoon, accumulations of 2 to 5 inches by the time we look into Saturday morning. Winter weather advisories in effect. Right now it's 1.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Musk and his little Doge ferrets, evidently, they found $711.6 million that they're going to save the American taxpayer. And they're going to refund it, I guess. At least that's what the meme says. And my favorite, I love these memes because they're really for the dim. The $711.6 million that they're going to refund to us, the taxpayer, they claim every individual going to get $20,000. Now, look, I'm not the brightest math student, but that doesn't add up. But this is the kind of ridiculous nonsense that we keep being fed. Like they're saving us all this money when the reality is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau returned about $21 billion to consumers, somewhere in the neighborhood of the kind of cash that they're talking about. And here to share some thoughts on what Musk and the Doge twins are doing and what this means for us as workers and consumers, I've asked Alex Thornton to come talk with us. Alex is the Senior Director of Financial Regulation for Inclusive Economy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I'm sure you've seen these memes. We're going to get all this money back. It's getting rivers of gold and honey, Alex. We're going to kill these worthless waste, fraud, and abuse agencies and return the hard-earned pennies back to the American taxpayer.
Well, that's pretty surprising because I think the person who's going to gain the most is Musk himself. He just recently announced a partnership he's doing with Visa to add a payment system to X, his social media platform. And that would have been policed by the CFPB, which he's now seeking to abolish and shut down. And as you point out, the CFPB saves consumers billions of dollars. They help you whenever a bank tries to scam you. If they take money out of your account without explanation, if they charge you excessive fees, The CFPB polices all of that and protects you, the average consumer, from all kinds of financial scams and mistakes even, and predatory lending and all kinds of things.
Yeah, color me shocked that Musk would spend $250 million to get Trump elected and to get a return on investment of, I don't even know that you could calculate the amount that having no one looking over his shoulder while he scams, it's quite remarkable. But here's the thing. This is the weird, this is the sad reality of the world that we live in. When you hear the consumer, I can't even say it, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, the average American has no idea what this means. It sounds like jargon. It sounds like jumble. They don't know exactly how it helped them. But I think we're going to find out what it used to do.
Right. It was created in 2010 after the great financial crisis. And basically, it was given the central mission to make markets for consumer financial products and services work for Americans. So whether they're applying for a mortgage, choosing among credit cards, or using any number of other consumer financial products, the CFPB was going to oversee that, or did oversee that, anytime there was excessive, illegal, or hidden fees on credit cards, predatory lending, all kinds of other things. And it enabled people to, when they thought they were scammed, to file a complaint with the CFPB and monitor, and the CFPB would investigate that. You know, we have quite a number, over 20 laws in our country that protect consumers. And before the CFPB, those were scattered among a bunch of different agencies and regulators, and nobody was really enforcing them or overseeing them and protecting consumers. And the CFPB was created to be the one agency whose sole mission is to protect American consumers.
And now there's talk of they're just not going to fund it anymore, as I understand. Russell Voigt, the director of office, the Office of Budget and Management, evidently acting director of the CFPB. Am I getting this right?
That's right. And he, there's now been a permanent one nominated by Trump, but they will have to be approved and everything. But yes, Russell Voigt came in and basically stopped everything, basically told employees not to come in this week. He basically said, stop everything that you're doing, you know, stop public communications to warn consumers about scams or let them know, you know, how they can get help from the CFPB. They have to stop that. Stop enforcing consumer protection laws, suspending all the consumer protection rules that the CFPB has put forth. And basically, all of this is going to shut it down. They even asked the Fed, which collects fees from financial institutions to fund the CFPB and other places, basically told them not to send any more money to the CFPB. So they're defunding it and just closing it down. It's basically closed for business right now.
Yeah, they put him in charge of it specifically to shut it down. And look, this is what Trump and his minions have said they're going to do. I mean, I look at Linda McMahon at the Department of Education. Trump has said, I hope she puts herself out of a job. They want to destroy every arm of government. And one like this that's very helpful to consumers, right, to people. And this is where, you know, I got a question. Is this legal? I mean, wasn't this something that Congress enacted? Wasn't this something that that has some rule behind it?
Yes, I mean, there are laws behind it, and it is illegal, most likely. There are lawsuits being brought, but as you know, right now, that's really the main way to push back on these actions that are being taken. And not all courts now, many of them have very conservative judges now as a result of the first Trump administration. And so we'll see what happens. I think the courts in some cases are making the right decisions, but we'll see what happens. But you know, for now, Americans don't have this consumer protection.
No, while the wheels of justice are grinding slowly, people are getting screwed over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And meanwhile, of course, their personal data is in the hands of Elon Musk and his staff.
Man, you know, I go back to something, Mike, and I've said this a bunch of times. I'm sure my listeners are bored of it already. But you know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because he understands return on investment. Mm-hmm. I look at someone like Musk, and that quote from, I remember him saying it 40 years ago, is never more true than it is when I look at Elon Musk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what is he going to do, for example, with this financial information? How's he going to benefit from it? Well, you know, he might sell it. Could he sell it? Who would he sell it to? Would he use it for his own business purposes? You know, he bought his way into the federal government. He was the biggest campaign donor for President Trump. And now he's doing things that will enable him to profit personally. And that's a really, really serious concern. I think most Americans would be very concerned about that.
I mean, I think most Americans know that there are people who have bought their way into government, but those are generally ceremonial roles. We'll give you an ambassadorship to, you know, who knows where, and, you know, hey, thanks for your donation. That's how things have been done. This is the first time, at least that I can find, where, you know, an unelected, unaccountable, well, the richest man in the world has access to all of the levers of our government with no accountability, no oversight, and no one to question what he's doing.
I think that's right. I mean, there are some efforts, as I said, underway, but meanwhile, they're moving so fast. You know, as
it's
you say,
over.
The levers of justice. Yeah.
It's over. They've got the information. Musk and his little ferrets, they've already downloaded virtually every bit of information that I think they would probably want from our government, because the doors were wide open, as I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, they went into went into these different agencies, and they basically just took over and sent people, as you said, sent people home and leave the keys. You know, we'll go from here.
Yeah, basically, that is what happened. In some cases, they were pushed back a little bit or delayed. But, you know, for example, when they tried to get into the Treasury payment system, but then they got in. And so, as you say, that's done. But, you know, basically, yes, they're having access to a lot of things, and they're having a big, big say in how those agencies are funded and what they're doing. And that's something that everybody should be really concerned about, because Elon Musk was not elected.
Yeah. And more importantly, not just Musk. I mean, all of these little Doge boys, all of these literally children now having access to all of this information. A couple of them with some sketchy backgrounds. What comes of all of this down the road? What comes of all of this when they get their hands on it? You know, as 18, 19, 20-year-old brains, not thinking, you know, consequence and all of that. What does that give us?
Yeah. I mean, do we trust them?
I don't.
What legal recourse do we have if they do something with the information? Will Musk pay for that? You know, how can you undo that? Once information is out, you can't undo that.
I believe this is a failure of Congress. This is a failure of the Republican Congress to hold Musk and this in check. I literally cannot believe they've abdicated their responsibility to be a co-equal branch of government and to stop this from happening.
Yeah, they basically signed on to the Project 2025 playbook. And that's what a lot of this is carrying forth. In Project 2025, it said they wanted to abolish, in essence, the CFPB. And that's what's happening in this case. So yes, you're right. The Republicans in Congress have agreed to do all this, and they're not challenging it in most cases.
No, because look, you know, Musk, whatever happens, Musk will walk away. He's the richest man in the world. He can go anywhere. It's Congress who's going to eat this. I can't believe that they would be the, because they're going to be the fall guys. Why didn't you oversee this? Why didn't you hold hearings? Why didn't you hold them accountable? Why didn't you do anything? And I'm hoping in a year, when the election season starts ramping up, those questions are first and foremost.
Yeah. And when people see what's starting to happen where they don't have protection, I think that they'll start asking questions. Why, like you say, why weren't you here? Why didn't you protect us? We had laws. Why didn't you allow them to be carried out?
So now that this is going away, what should workers and consumers, what should they be watching out for? I mean, now we've got to be our own policemen again. And look, we all are. And I'm not saying that people are stupid. I'm not saying that, you know, people make all bad choices. But there are some really crafty characters out there. There are some really very interesting schemes to get into your pocket. Since there's no cop on the beat now and no place to go to get justice, in my view. What should people be looking out for?
Well, you know, they should be careful about their data and what transactions they do. But look, you know, it's hard because financial transactions, usually one person, the financial institution, has all the information. A lot of this stuff is electronic, digitized now, and it's very hard for the consumer to know when they're being scammed. So it's a very difficult situation. And I think that they should definitely communicate with their, elected representatives and demand that they do something.
Yeah. Is this something that you see Democrats fighting? Yeah. Is this one of the hills you see them suppose, quote unquote, dying on to save this? Or are we going to let this go kind of like they've let USAID go?
No, I think the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is very, very important to these members, and they will protect it. As you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren has really been working hard to get people together and educate them about what this means for American consumers when they're getting a car loan, when they're getting a mortgage for their home or whatever. And I think this is one of the most important ones, because this is really at the core of what Americans expect from their government is, you know, protection from big corporations, banks, big financial institutions. That's at the core of what Americans want their elected representatives to do for them.
We seem to forget easily. You know, I have people, you know, they give me the right wing line of, you know, job killing regulations. And I usually follow up with, you know, people killing lack of regulation. And I think it's easy to forget why something was enacted or why Congress thought it was important to move in a direction. Real quick, yeah. I mean, in the last line of questioning I've got for you, why was this put into place? You know, walk us through, if you can, the memory of why this is important and the lesson we should have learned. And I thought we learned, but we evidently are going to have to potentially learn again.
Yeah, back in the 2008 financial crisis, people may remember that there were many people who got mortgages who shouldn't have had mortgages, who were scammed into taking out sometimes multiple mortgages. And so when the mortgage industry, when people started not being able to make payments on those mortgages and so forth, the banks came in and foreclosed on those homes, and we had just massive consumer problems and impacts on consumers. And then the economy went into, we had the great the recession that happened after that, and people suffered. And so Congress said, look, we want to stop these kinds of scammy practices. We don't want financial institutions to be giving people products and services that aren't appropriate or that have bad terms. And so they established the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They said, you know, we have all these consumer laws, but they're not being enforced because they're scattered around. Let's put them all under one agency and have that agency specialize in helping consumers. And so that's what the CFPB does. And of course, that scared banks and other financial institutions, because now they would actually be they would be policed for their adherence to these rules. And ever since the beginning, they've been attacking the CFPB, the financial industry. And so here we are today, the CFPB survived up until now, and it should be very concerning to every American that, what Musk is doing, and also just the sort of MAGA Republicans, you know, what they want to do to deregulate the CFPB and get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was amazing how fast from the end of Glass-Steagall until the collapse in 2008, how fast that happened. When you took the guardrails off, how fast the hucksters and the schemesters crashed this economy. And my fear is, by again taking away the guardrails, we're driving the car towards the cliff.
Yeah, and average Americans usually can't afford to have something like this happen to them. You know, Elon Musk can have, you know, some kind of, you know, failure of one of his companies or something like that, and he's still got billions of dollars. But average people can't afford to have these kinds of things happen to them.
So what should people do? Is there an act here? Is there a bit of outrage? Should we be calling people? Should we be, you know, marching in the streets? Any thoughts of, or is this just a done? I think it's a done deal, but I want your thought.
Well, it is a done deal for now, but they should definitely, you know, pressure their representatives in Congress to do something about it and to do their job.
Yeah, do their job. That's a good one. Alex, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the information. I look forward to talking to you again as well The attacks continue. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for you having me.
Alex Thornton, Senior Director of Financial Regulation for an Inclusive Economy there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. Make sure you check that out. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you paying attention? Are you worried that you're going to get shafted? I know I am. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. What labor union would you say has the coolest name? The Sons of Vulcan would most certainly have to be in the running. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day the Sons of Vulcan ended their 8-month strike and won a union contract. The Vulcans were skilled steelworkers. Many were immigrants from England, Scotland, and Wales. They worked at puddling, the process by which carbon was burnt off of molten iron in order to form steel. It was tough work that required physical strength, skill, and experience. The Vulcans first formed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1858. A skilled trade union, only puddlers were eligible to join. They called their locals forges. They took their name, Vulcan, from the Roman god of fire and volcanoes. With the ongoing Civil War, the demand for steel grew. The work of the Vulcans was vital to the Union's war effort. But as the Civil War drew to a close, puddlers' wages were threatened. The Vulcans declared a national strike. The strike wore on for 8 months. Finally, the industry leaders agreed to the workers' demands. The Vulcans won wage increases tied to industry profits as well as union recognition. With this victory, the Vulcans' membership grew. By 1873, the number of Vulcans had topped 3,000 members. Unfortunately, that year saw a major economic panic sweep across the United States. The economic crisis took a toll on union membership. Another downfall of the union was their policy not to admit black members. This meant that employers could hire black labor in an effort to undermine the union. By 1876, the Vulcans had merged with other steel unions to form the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, the reality is quite simple. Anytime they loosen financial regulations, anytime they go, no, we've learned our lesson, corporate America will be okay this time. They've learned. Anytime we've done that, workers and consumers have gotten screwed. Every time we go, no, they learned. You know, when they did away with Glass-Steagall, and I remember the arguments at the time, these antiquated rules, they're not good for today's economic world. We need to loosen the reins and let entrepreneurs and capitalists and venture capitalists and vultures, we need to let them all unleash the power of good. We're going to all be millionaires. We're going to all be great. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be daisies and sunshines and white floppy hats. It's going to be amazing. And what it turned into for some, yeah, a handful, sure. For the majority of people, a nightmare. I remember 2009, 2010, fighting to keep people in their homes because of what the mortgage industry had done. I knew people who had gotten 2 and 3 loans. I knew one very close person who I remember, you know, talking to at the time, who bought a house for, like, let's say it was, I think it was $75,000. And they took out a loan for like $70,000 for the first part. And then to get away from the PMI, the private mortgage insurance, they took out a 15-year loan for like 20% more, and they paid a crazy interest rate. And then, once they got in the house, they got a consolidation kind of loan to pay some credit cards. So this house that was like 75 grand was mortgaged to about 125. And you go, how could they do that? Well, no rules. And they were just writing things as fast as they could. And it was explained to me like this. An old banker, you know, doing this show, reached out and said, this is what happened. And he said, during my career as a banker, going back into the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s, he said, look, you know, bankers would write a mortgage based on your ability to pay. You know, you had to have X amount of dollars in the bank. You had to have, you know, a reserve. You couldn't spend more than a certain percentage of your income on housing. You had to have 20% down. They were literally writing people with no money down kind of mortgages at the time. And he said, look, what the banking industry learned is that mortgages are front-end loaded. Most of the money that they get, you know, in the first 5 or 6 years. It's heavy interest at the beginning. So they get their money back sooner. And they make their profit there. And then, you know, whatever happens down there, that's something else. What they figured out is the asset kept going up. The housing prices kept going up. So even if you failed, they would succeed because they could take the house back and they could sell it into foreclosure, get their money, and then some. And it was this kind of gamble that the banking industry, in large part thanks to the Clinton era, Gramm-Leach-Bliley economic reform that did away with Glass-Steagall and allowed, you know, gambling houses basically to write mortgages. And what they did is they created a giant bubble. And the bubble burst in 2008, which was predictable. They had been predicting it all through the Bush years, and Bush did nothing, allowed it to happen. So when the collapse hit, and oh my God, we got to bail everybody out because we don't know what it looks like if we allow the big banks to fail, we did. And millions of people lost their homes, millions of people lost their savings. And nobody really went to jail. And this, I think, is one of Obama's greatest failures. Understand, if something like that were to happen, I think under someone like Trump, we'd be perp walking people. Because that's what the American people wanted. We wanted justice. We wanted someone to be held accountable other than just throw up our hands and go, well, you know, too big to fail. And what we got was this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is a place where, you know, they do look at abusive practices. They do look at unfair and deceptive practices. And they do protect consumers. They provide financial education, provide, you know, resources and tools for us. We to understand the little box on your credit card bill, tell you how long it's going to pay something off. Great idea. Because of them. There's a resolution process where if you think you got screwed, you can go through it. But more importantly, they analyze and collect data. Lots of it. They do lots of research and they watch what's going on. Understand, when these big financial firms think that there's someone who's gathering information on how they're doing business and trying to proactively ensure that they don't, maybe they don't do the crooked stuff. But if Musk and his little Doge boys and Voight and his crew completely destroy this, it's the Wild West again. There's no cop on the beat. And you know yourself, you're on the highway and you know there's no cop on the road. How fast you going? You stopping completely at that stop sign? This is one of those moments where you got to ask yourself, what do you think corporate America is going to do? What do you think the vulture capitalists on Wall Street are going to do? And I think we know. They're going to rob us blind. They're going to create another bubble. They're going to create another scenario where something goes pop, and then they're going to come back to us and go, well, you know, if we don't get bailed out, we're going to collapse the economy, and there'll be a depression. Jobs will be lost, and savings will be lost. Because understand, get this, they're fiddling with the FDIC. So if you got money in a bank and they're fiddling with the federal deposit insurance and it's not there, what are you setting up for? Understand, all this chaos, all this stuff that Trump and Musk and company are doing are about destabilizing this country, especially for us. For them, it's short-term gain. It's, hey, rob and pillage. It's plunder time. And unfortunately, we're going to be the ones holding the bag. We're going to be the ones who are going to get stuck when the bill comes. Because I guarantee you, it's coming. And they know it's coming. And they know what we do because we've done it before. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Does this concern you? Or is this, no, we're going to just destroy government, let it all go up in flames. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Mass layoffs of federal workers have begun. High on the list of those being blown out, probationary employees. Acting Office of Personnel Management Director Charles Ezell gathered those workers to give them the bad news. ABC News got its hands on the audio.
You will receive your termination notice via email shortly, and it will include the reason for termination. As a result, your employment with the Office of Personnel Management will end today.
A Texas judge fined New York physician Maggie Carpenter $100,000 for prescribing mifepristone to a woman near Dallas. Louisiana issued an arrest warrant for Carpenter for doing the same thing, New York rejecting an extradition demand. Executions in Texas and Florida. Florida giving a lethal injection to James Dennis Ford, condemned for murdering a husband and wife in 1997. Texas executed Richard Lee Tabler for a double homicide in 2004. This is ABC News. After a federal